If you think milk and apples come from the grocery store, stay listening. This is Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. These days, we tend to think that milk comes from a grocery store instead of from a cow. And similarly, we think apples come from the grocery store instead of from an orchard. Today, Discovering Virginia takes you to Carter Mountain Orchard, owned by the Childs family, which owns several orchards. Carter Mountain Orchard is just 15 minutes south of Charlottesville, about an hour west of Richmond. And with me is Cynthia Childs of Carter Mountain Orchard. Cynthia, tell us about all the apples available here at Carter Mountain.
Yeah, thank you for being here. We grow about 15 different varieties of apples. Our first apples that come in season are actually, most people don't realize this, but we start picking apples in July, actually. Our first early season apples come in July, and we pick apples all the way through November. So we have a long season here with a lot of different apples available at different times of the season.
Tell me the history of this place.
Sure. Well, we're very fortunate. Our next door neighbor here is Thomas Jefferson, or at least his property. Monticello is adjacent property to us here. So in some research I did a few years ago, because we've always loved to say that Thomas Jefferson owned this place, but we could never prove it, and I still can't prove it. But in some of Thomas Jefferson's writings, he refers to this land. This land was actually part of a land grant to the Carter family back in the early days, the Carters who were from Williamsburg and in the House of Burgesses. So there's some history there. I researched this through Monticello, which has a extensive library, as well as the Albemarle County Historical Society. So throughout Jefferson's writings, he does refer to the land owned by my friend Edward Carter, or land as far as I can see on Carter's Mountain, which was referring to his friend John Carter and the mountain here. So we still would love to be able to say that this was part of Jefferson's estate, but I don't believe that it was. But it does, it was part of a 10,000 acre land grant at that time, and has had several owners throughout the years. My family started leasing this property back in the mid 70s, and we purchased it in the 80s.
Fairly recently.
Yes, within 30 or 40. Yes, within 30 or 40 years. It was owned. It's been operated as a commercial apple orchard for over 100 years. We leased it from some friends of ours who owned it when they were retiring and starting to get out of the business, and we were looking to increase what we were doing in this area. So we went into a lease agreement with them. Operating at first as a commercial orchard, and then one spring we had a pretty significant freeze where we lost most of the apples for that year, and so we often have to bring in crews of migrant workers, temporary workers, to help us pick the apples. And that year we didn't believe we had enough apples on the trees to warrant bringing a crew in. So this is certainly way before the local food movement and, the movement towards direct marketing and agritourism. But my parents thought, well, I wonder if people would want to come and pick apples. I'm like, oh, who knows? We can try it. So my mom took out a little classified ad in our local paper, and she sat up here for about 4 weeks that fall. And people came, and they picked their apples, and they had a great time. And we considered that just a one-year deal. Like, this, we had a bad crop. Let's just do this to salvage something and move on. So the next year, my mom's phone started ringing, and people are like, when can we come pick those apples? And she's like, oh, you really want to do that again? Okay, I guess we could do that. So she and my dad decided to set aside a few acres of this orchard for people to be able to come and pick their own. We literally, she sat here with a money box and just sat. This building we're in right now was still our mechanical barn. We had tractors, we had equipment, we had stuff everywhere, and we just cleaned out a little space for her to sit and with a scale and a money box and sell a few apples. And so she was so surprised when people wanted to come back the next year, and so it just kind of has snowballed from there. this orchard here is about 200 acres. It's not all set aside for pick your own, but a good percentage of it is. And each year we have to set aside a little bit more because we are very fortunate that people want to come back each year and bring their children. You know, we have families coming now, and the mom and dad tell us that their parents used to bring them when they were children, and now they want to bring their kids because they had such good memories of it. People like to come here and take their Christmas card photos, or, you know, have their family, you know, they all meet here. They're coming from four or five different areas, and they meet here for a day and spend the day outside and unplugged and with family and friends. And so we're grateful that we've been able to offer that to people, and that people want to keep doing it. So we're still here.
Cynthia, for you and your family, it's a business. You grow apples, you sell apples commercially, and yet for the public, they can come up and pick their own, and that's an adventure for them.
It sure is.
Rather than going to the grocery store.
Absolutely. You know, I if people only want apples, they can go to the grocery stores, and they should, and I love that. I mean, we sell apples to the grocery stores. I'm happy if that's really what they're looking for. But if they're looking for the full experience, they want to come spend time outside. I love to see when the light bulb goes off over a kid's head when they connect, you know, wow, there's that apple that I see in the grocery store on the tree. I'm putting it in my hand. I'm picking it. There's a value there that you don't get when you go to the grocery store.
A few minutes ago, before we started this interview, you told me that certain apples can't be grown in Virginia because we don't have a cold enough climate.
Yep.
What apples are grown at Carter Mountain?
Sure. Yeah, we grow, as I said, about 15 varieties. We start with our early season apples like Ginger Gold, Virginia Gold, Gala. Then we also grow Golden Delicious, Red Delicious, Stamen, Wine Sap, Fuji, Granny Smith, Rome, Albemarle Pippin, Pink Lady. There's probably a couple more in there, but I think I've hit most of the highlights. Jonathan and Macintosh as well. So a lot of apples that get ripe at different times throughout the fall season. But it gives us a nice long season here.
Now, you're open to the public only a certain amount of time.
Right.
But what happens during the four seasons here at Carter?
Sure, yeah. Everybody thinks that once we close down after October that we go to Hawaii or we, you know, lounge around. But actually, I think most of the work happens over the winter. Certainly, it's our time to repair equipment and buildings. To in the orchard itself, each and every apple tree gets pruned every year. And that happens in the winter and early spring. So we're employing 40 and 50 people in our orchard all year long. And so once the harvest is over, there's a lot of cleanup that has to happen on the farm. Then all the trees get pruned. If we're going to do any planting of trees, that happens in the late winter and early spring as well. Just as a side note, you know, if you're growing apples commercially or for large production, after about 20 to 25 years, the tree starts to produce not as many apples. It's just kind of the old age process there. So you can have an apple tree in your yard for 100 years and you still get a few apples off of it every year. But if it's your business, that's when you start replanting. You push them up and you replant. So all of that planning is happening over the winter. You know, we have to plan that out 3 or 4 or 5 years in advance, because once you push out some apple trees and replant, it's going to be 3 years before you get an apple off the tree. So you don't want to push out an entire orchard and then you have 3 years of no production. So we do it gradually, and it's a very much of a planned effort in replanting trees to keep production up.
Cynthia Childs, you and your family have another orchard.
We do. We sure do. Well, we have several orchards that we grow apples just for our wholesale business. We also have a packing and shipping facility in the southern part of the county. But we have another orchard that we open to the public. It's called Child's Peach Orchard. It's about 20 minutes west of here in Crozet, just at the foot of the Blue Ridge Mountains. So it's, you know, lovely. Up here, you're on top of the mountain looking down. Down in Crozet, we're at the base of the mountain looking up. I was just out there this morning right before I came here, and the fall color looking up into the mountain, even though it's slightly past peak, it's just incredible. So we grow mainly peaches at that orchard. We also have some strawberries, blueberries, sweet cherries and pumpkins and apples. So our season there is just now coming to an end.
And that is open to the public.
It is open to the public. Sure is, yeah.
Now, you mentioned that this started, your family leased the property, then you bought the property.
Right.
It's a commercial operation. People started, the public started coming in. But then you started having special events and you started offering educational things.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Well, you know, we're just trying to use this land that we're blessed with in the best way that we can. And, you know, our, as I said, you know, we started off with my mom sitting up here and selling a few apples, and then people wanted other things. You know, what else can we buy here? Well, people want to spend money. Let's give them something to buy, right? So we, over the course of time, one of the first things that we did add, you mentioned earlier, donuts. We added a bakery, and we started making apple cider donuts. And you would think that these things are, I don't know, people come from all over for the, I think they come for the donuts more than they come for the apples. Yeah, a lot of people do. You can see when people get out of the car and their nose, they're sniffing around. They're like, where are they? What's that? You know, when somebody's never been here before, that's their first smell when they get out of the car. And so, we pride ourselves on, especially during our peak times, serving them warm, you know, right off the fryer, and people will stand in line to wait for a hot donut. You know, we were just talking this morning, because some days we reach capacity and our donut machines can only produce so many donuts at a time, and people do end up having to wait in line for a while. And I was saying, you know, we could be Dunkin' Donuts. I could have, you know, shifts running 24 hours. We could easily make enough donuts, but people want that nice, warm, hot off the fryer with that sugar just melting on it donut. And they're willing to wait for it because they want it hot and fresh like that. So we do pride ourselves on, during our busiest days, you know, we're making donuts all day long. So that's I think what we're as famous for those as our apples some days, I think. But going back to your question, what are we doing up here?
For education.
Yeah,
like,
well,
that.
We just listened to our customers, and here, you know, we found people were coming in and they were asking all kinds of questions, and that's when we realized, you know, people really aren't learning some of this. And because this is such a family atmosphere here, it's families coming up together and spending time together, we started talking to some of our local schools, and, you know, they said, wow, we would love, you know, to be able to show kids where their food's coming from. And I'm going back 30 years. You know, that's very trendy now, local food, and which, of course, we love. But this is even back before that. So we just started working with some of the local schools in our county here, Albemarle County, who would bring a school bus or two of children up here. My mother would get up on the school bus and talk to the children a little bit. We would put them on a hay wagon and let them take a ride around the farm, and give them a little bag to go out and pick apples. And they would go home and tell their mom and dad how much fun they had. And then we found out, wow, now that the whole family comes back on the weekend, this is working. So over the years, we started marketing that a little bit more. We found out about 10 or 12 years ago, when some school systems were having some budget issues. The teachers couldn't take as many field trips as they wanted. The state standards of learning were very important in their curriculum. So we redesigned our curriculum. My sister was an elementary school teacher for 25 years, so she helped us really tweak our education so that these teachers could justify to their principals or their school boards, it's a fun field trip, but it is very educational, and here's what we're learning. And so we now have a staff of 3 or 4 or 5 folks, many of them are retired teachers, who help us with the education of these kids. So I would say the last couple of years, we've had close to 10,000 kids each fall coming up and participating in field trips here. And they come from, many come from the Richmond area. They come from over in the valley. There aren't, as, you know, they have to come that far to be able to do this. And so, those are some of our favorite days up here, when the school buses are rolling in and We give the children, depending on their, you know, each grade level or age level gets a lesson that's appropriate for what they're learning. We put a teacher's packet together so that they can start teaching some of this information before the kids get here. You know, if they're in second or third grade, we're talking about math and fractions, and we're cutting up apples, and, you know, we're cutting it into half and then quarters and then eighths, and show, you know, the visual of the math. We talk a lot about economy. We talk a lot about actual production of apples. And we work with groups of all, from all walks of life and all ways. We have a lot of certainly local public elementary schools that come, a lot of our local private schools. There's a school here this morning. It's one of the private schools here in this area. We work with Girl Scout and Boy Scout troops that come and are earning a patch for their requirements. We've got groups from churches that come as a youth activity, and again, they want to just get a little bit of a lesson, we want to teach them a little bit about apples while they're here. Interestingly, some of the most interesting groups to work with are groups of homeschool students, because you have a wide variety of ages at the same time. Mm. So you're not using a cookie cutter lesson, right? You're because you've got a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old and a 12-year-old and an 18-year-old that are all here, and you've got to design a lesson that will appeal to everybody. So yeah, we love working with those groups. It's a lot of fun. And, but yeah, there's a lot of energy on the days that we have field trips here.
Cynthia Childs, educate us a little bit about apples.
Sure.
We can find apples in the grocery store almost year round, but when we come to Carter Mountain, they're absolutely fresh, picked off the trees.
That's right. Exactly right. Good. Great.
How does this work?
Yeah, great point. Apples are found year round, and I think because of that, the public doesn't understand the seasonality of things. When they come here and, you know, they want to go picking Golden Delicious apples, well, our Golden Delicious have all been picked now. That's an earlier season apple. We get phone calls in May and June. You're open. We want to come pick apples. And, you know, and the apples are about the size of a pea at that time. I think, you know, it's become a little homogenized now in the stores because, you know, of the global economy, and apples are available from all over the world at any time of year. But apples can be kept in cold storage for up to a year or even more, depending on how good the technology is at the cold storage. So apples do all have to be picked during a, you know, 2 or 3 month period. But they can go into cold storage. There's a technique called controlled atmosphere, where you actually put the apples in a storage room. You remove the oxygen from the room, and they just go dormant. So, and they can stay in that atmosphere for, as I said, even up to a year. So we pick all of our apples in the fall, but we're still packing them and selling them to the grocery stores in March, April, May, June, because we can hold them in these rooms. Once you want to use the apples, you reintroduce oxygen into the room, then they become more perishable, and you've got to work with them pretty quickly. But there's a lot of technology out there that allows, you know, Washington State obviously is our biggest producer of apples in the United States. They've got apples in storage from the last year or so. So any of the apples that you're buying in the stores in past about this time of year are going to have come from storage, possibly from the East Coast, very likely from the West Coast. And apples are even imported from South America during the winter because, you know,
our
spring is their fall. And so they're picking apples and shipping them into the United States in the off season for us here. So.
But when people come to get apples here,
they're getting it as fresh as it comes. They are. They, you know, as I said, they can go into the orchard to pick it off the tree themselves. A lot of people don't want to do that, or don't have the time, or maybe just don't have the ability to do that. You probably noticed when you got here, we've got bins full of apples out front. So our crews are picking fresh apples every day, bringing them in. So if somebody did not want to pick their own but still wanted a farm fresh apple, and the whole experience of driving up the top of the mountain and getting a donut and enjoying the view while they're here, can still get a very fresh apple.
That's a good point. We've been talking about growing apples, mm-hmm. but you have apples for sale that you don't have to go pick.
That's right.
They're ready to
there, right?
Fresh
there.
And ready.
A lot of people don't have time. You know, at this point in the season, you got to walk about 15 minutes each way to get to the apples. I don't want to do that. But here's an apple that was just picked today. So.
You have more answers than I have questions. What have we not covered?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, we have learned over the years that, you know, certainly the buy fresh, buy local and all of the, you know, the people wanting to connect more back to the farm has certainly been good for our business. We've been very fortunate over the years that that people really value being able to come onto the farm. Many of our customers are coming from urban areas. Richmond's probably our number one market. I think we get more customers from Richmond than we do from Charlottesville. People are coming to us from Northern Virginia. They're coming from Hampton Roads area. They are really looking to escape, you know, suburbia and get out to the farm and bring their families. And, you know, the parents remember going to grandma's farm, but their kids don't have that connection anymore. So being able to bring their families out, certainly enjoy all we have to offer here, and not just here at our orchard, but in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. We're so close to the Skyline Drive and Shenandoah Park, and, you know, there are wineries and breweries and cideries all around. People can really make a day or a weekend trip out of it. So we certainly appreciate being neighbors here with Monticello, with Mickey Tavern, with Ashlawn. We're in a very historic area here. And so we have found that people are coming out to see those things, and they want to make a trip up to the orchard too. So over the course of time, we have extended our seasons. We planted some peaches up here so people can pick their own peaches in the summertime or buy them already picked. We've added a lot of special events. People want to come up here and just enjoy our view. And so we do in the spring, summer, and fall, we do an event on Thursday nights where we stay open late till 9 or 9:30 in the evening. We have live music. We serve dinner. People can just come up in the summertime and enjoy, watch the sunset from our back deck. And we have weddings up here and office parties and corporate events and children's birthday parties and adult birthday parties. And people just are very, want to be connected to the farm, and especially if it's just nothing they've grown up with or their kids have grown up with. They really see it as an opportunity to teach their kids about that. So we're grateful for that.
At the very beginning, you mentioned that you're neighbors to Thomas Jefferson's Monticello and Mickey Tavern.
Yeah.
But tell people, nuts and bolts, how to get here.
Sure.
Where you are and how to get here.
Yeah, it's so easy. We're located just off Interstate 64. So depending on where you're coming from, you can get to 64. We're off exit 121, which is Route 20. All the signs say to Monticello. We're right before you get to Monticello, so we ride off their signs a lot. We have some little signs, but Monticello's got a bigger budget. They've got bigger signs. So we just tell people to follow the signs to Monticello, and they'll get right to us. But joking aside, we're just off 2 miles off Interstate 64 at the intersection with Route 20 and Route 53, which goes, as I said, directly to Monticello. So people can make a nice day of, we love to send people to Mickey Tavern for lunch and get that awesome, you know, tavern colonial lunch. The historical sites like Monticello and Ashlawn, which are just so, you know, we're so fortunate to be in, surrounded by that history here. There's a nice winery down the road. You know, you can go 2 miles and make a really nice day here.
You mentioned winery. You do have wines for sale.
We do,
here.
Yeah. We actually grow wine grapes, 5 or 6 different varietals. The Prince Michelle Winery out of Madison County, Virginia, leases some space here. They make 4 of their wines exclusively using our grapes. So we've got a Carter Mountain Chardonnay, a Merlot, a Cabernet Sauvignon, and a blend, a red blend. Then they also sample and sell the wines made from their grapes and other grapes as well. And then the newest addition for us this year is a tasting room for Bold Rock Hard Cider. We just added that this year. It opened in June. We provide most of the apples that Bold Rock uses in their production of hard cider. So it was really a nice you know, farm-to-glass experience here. People can sit out on the deck and have a glass of hard cider or a glass of wine, both made from the fruits from right here.
you are also on the internet.
We are on the internet. We're everywhere. Yep, we've got a pretty detailed website that explains all the things people can do here. It's cartermountainorchard.com. You can also get to the websites of our other farms from that same site. We've got a very active social media plan. We have a Facebook page, a Twitter account, which we keep updated sometimes even several times a day. We don't like to flood people, but we get a lot of questions. Number one question is, what's the weather? So all day long, people are calling or Facebooking or are tweeting, you know, what's the weather? We want to come up. They want to know what we're picking, what special events we have going on, how's the traffic, all kinds of questions. So we try to stay up on all of that. It's become quite a job. Keeping up with social media has become a job now. It used to just be something I could lay in bed in the morning and make a couple of notes on my iPad and I'm done for the day. Not anymore. It's people are, I guess our world is trained that they want immediate responses. And so, but yes, we try to be as accessible as possible. We still have old fashioned telephones and people call us all the time and ask us questions about what's going on. We absolutely encourage, we don't want people to get here and have an expectation that's not what we can fulfill. So we love for people to call us or email us or, you know, find us on social media, get the answer to their questions so that they can have a great day when they come.
What is that phone number?
434-977-1833.
So people can find you on the internet, they can find you on Facebook, on Twitter, telephone number, you're accessible.
We try to be as accessible as possible.
Cynthia Childs, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
You're listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.